Welcome, everybody, to the Brown Wolf Podcast. I'm so happy you're here because today we're taking a little trip around the world in search of some healthy food habits, healthy eating habits. So I've always been kind of an admirer of how different cultures approach food in a completely different way than, for example, I did when I was growing up, or that many of us do right now. So we hurry through our meals. We kind of eat without having any awareness. You know, you've heard me talk about mindful eating and all of the wonderful little habits and tools that we teach you at Brownville and in our online program. But today I wanted to kind of take you along this little ride to other places to see how other cultures are naturally have this relationship to food in a very different way. So I hope that we can learn from this. The idea is that we'll be able to steal some of these habits and incorporate them in our lives. So a couple of months ago, Carlos and I curled up on the couch to watch the latest Michael Moore documentary, Where to Invade Next. Have you seen this movie yet? I can't recommend it highly enough. Anyone I have recommended it to has absolutely loved it. And, you know, this is a film which I can easily say is my favorite of all the ones he's done. This film has zero to do with war, in spite of that title, and everything to do with looking at what other countries are doing amazingly well in everything from education and politics and the prison system, the military, research, civil rights, workers' rights, women's rights, you know, you name it. Michael Moore went there to study it, to understand it, and to potentially steal it and take it back to the U.S. So this Where to Invade Next has nothing to do with war. It has to do with taking a look at what is working so well for some countries out there and taking it back, right? So it's the funniest, most eye-opening and fun film he's ever done, in my opinion, of course. And it was so incredible to see how some countries are just getting it right. They're getting it right. They've found a system that works in all of these different areas, right? So not each country in all areas, but different countries in different areas have really found what I love to call that sweet spot, right? So one of the areas that he explored in this film was, of course, food, especially when it comes to the food served in schools, in school cafeterias to kids and teenagers. So where did he go to steal all of these good eating habits? You guessed it. You're going to laugh because this is the country that I mention again and again, not because it's particularly a very plant-based centric cuisine. In fact, it's quite the opposite. This is my only little, this is the only thing I don't like about their way of eating. But I have such an admiration for this country, and it's because of their way of looking at and experiencing food. It's just totally on point. And you know what I'm going to say, right? You've heard me talk about this country so many times when it comes to a healthy approach to eating. And it's France, right? France. So in the film, he shows, it was my favorite part of the film. Of course, I'm a little biased because, you know, anything that talks about, you know, the way we approach the plate and the moment of eating, it's just got me completely hooked, right? So in the film, he shows French children at a school taking hour-long breaks for mealtime. You know, no rushing, no waiting in lines, and real food served on actual plates through different courses even. So children, you would see children drinking water instead of soda. And there is a very, very funny, well, funny and sad, but funny clip of these kids looking completely grossed out when they saw photos of what children were eating in school cafeterias in the U.S. So they would see, you know, the chicken nuggets and the pizza and the strange kind of, I don't know, they just, of course, they picked probably the worst photos for this. But it is true. When you look at what kids are being served in cafeterias, at least in the U.S., you really kind of see that something is off, right? It's just so, so unhealthy. It has no resemblance of a beautiful plate at all. It's just something that's plopped on there and that kids eat because, of course, it has fat, it has sugar, it has salt, and that tastes good, right? But it's not something healthy. So these kids who have been used to having three-course meals served in a plate with a fork and a knife that is real in their little tables at the cafeteria, they looked at these photos and they were completely floored. And it was sad and it was funny. I just, it shows you that, you know, it's not about the fact that kids want to eat these unhealthy foods and that that's all they want to eat. It all has to do with the way these kids are raised, right? So this immediately made me want to do a similar exercise and give you the lowdown on what different cultures around the world are doing right when it comes to their relationship with food and the act of eating. So just like Michael Moore went to all of these different countries to steal ideas of how to improve the political system, the economic system, the military system, prison system, all of everything that has to do with civil rights, just as he went to these different countries to steal some of that, those ideas, it just gave me that idea that I wanted to do that based on, you know, those habits that we have around the act of eating. Now, the great news is that you can totally steal any of these healthy eating habits that sound good to you, and you can start using them in your life. That's kind of the idea behind today's episode. Now, although I will be mentioning the presence of plant-based foods in the following places that I'm going to tell you about, this post is not about how vegan-friendly a particular world cuisine is or about specific traditions that include vegan foods. This is not what I want to focus on today. We can certainly do that in another episode because absolutely, you know, different countries have, well, many countries have a big focus and it's very centered on plant-based foods, even though you might not think so. Now, if you want to dive more into that, I have to recommend you've heard me talk about her before, Wendy Wernith. She has the best vegan travel blog out there, and she kind of guides you towards the plant-based foods and meals that are typical in each area around the world. So if you want to dive more into that, we're certainly going to cover that in a post or in an episode soon. But if you want to head on down that road, or if you're about to travel, you have to go check that out. That's thenomadicvegan.com. I have to give a little plug because she is amazing and the work she does is amazing. But what we're going to focus on today is, you know, how people relate to food, how people from around the world relate to food and making healthy choices. So it's about the habits, not so much if the cuisine is more plant-based centered or if there are a lot of vegan by default dishes in that cuisine. That's a topic for another day. So I have had the pleasure of living in three different countries throughout my life with three very distinct ways of eating. I was born and raised in Venezuela, as you know. I have lived in the United States and I have lived and I'm currently living in Spain. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do my best to share my personal experience in these places as well as in many others, which I've been kind of researching and learning about for years. And yes, we're going to be talking about France again. I know I sound like a broken record, but when it comes to their relationship with food, I feel that it's where most of those healthy habits are concentrated. I really, really do. Okay, so what would I steal from these cultures? So having had the experience of eating a typical Venezuelan diet, a typical American diet, and let me tell you that even though I was born in Venezuela, my meals were mostly kind of American-style meals. So I'm very used to having a big dinner at the table with, you know, I was a total meat and potatoes kind of girl, and that's what we had at home. So I have had this experience in these three places, but I've kind of been stealing little habits from this and that cuisine and from these different countries. So let's dive right in, right? So I want you to keep in mind what your eating habits are like right now, what you feel you kind of need a little help with or a little inspiration with, and just think of what you like. I'm going to mention different habits from different places, different approaches. You're going to see a lot of common threads within these cultures. And I want you to steal anything that sounds doable, anything that sounds like it could help you improve your relationship with food, make healthy choices at the table. And of course, I'm going to be mentioning some plant-based foods and you know, some plant-based, I don't know, just ways of eating and how these are present in these cultures. But remember, mostly it's about your relationship with food. So first on the list, I want to talk about India. So Indian cuisine includes a very prominent use of aromatics and spices. So both of these add a ton of rich, bold flavors to the meal. And especially when heat in the form of chilies is added, spicy dishes help you feel fuller and more satisfied. This is something that has been proven, and it just helps you feel fuller. It helps you feel like you've had an amazing meal and that you're satisfied and that you can stop when you're full. So it also allows you, because all of these flavors are intense and they kind of, I don't know, they just wake up your palate. This allows you to use a little bit less salt, since the herbs and the spices used, they provide so much flavor. So if you have an issue with sodium, you need to reduce your sodium intake, this is a great thing to start doing. Start incorporating more spices and aromatics into your dishes. Now, we have a great episode and post called Spice It Up, which you will love because it's all about spices. It's all about developing those flavor profiles from each kind of world cuisine. And I give you my favorites and ways to use them. And I also teach you about the basics of how to develop flavors using spices. Now, another incredible tool that stems from Ayurveda. So Ayurveda is the ancient healing tradition of India. And you've heard me mention this one lots of times before, especially in our post and our episode, podcast episode called All About Cravings, because this is my favorite tool for preventing cravings, especially those sweet cravings at the end of every meal. So from Ayurveda, which is that ancient healing tradition of India, is the kind of, I don't know, the habit of adding a little sample of every taste in every meal. So in Ayurveda, in order to create balanced meals that are satisfying and that especially help prevent cravings, a little sample of every taste is used in the dishes. So for example, including something sweet, something sour, something salty, something pungent, and something astringent. These are very specific tastes to the Ayurvedic kitchen. And you can learn more about, you know, what foods provide each of these in that episode called All About Cravings. So a secret weapon for this, if you're kind of getting started on incorporating all tastes and, you know, you don't want to go crazy buying all these different types of ingredients. So Ayurvedic cuisine is beautiful. It's wonderful. It's so much fun to cook. It kind of requires lots of different spices and different ingredients, but a secret weapon for simplifying this is to include a little mango chutney with your meals, which traditionally has a bit of each taste. Now, remember, always check labels, especially if you're buying mango chutney in a regular supermarket in the US or wherever you live. Check the ingredients, make sure there isn't, you know, sugar in the top of those ingredients. You know, mango chutney is really, really basic. It should include mango paste and some mango, some spices. It's really simple. So make sure there aren't any crazy ingredients or any what I like to call westernized ingredients. So make sure that it's based on whole foods, and it's a great, great addition because traditionally it does include ingredients that have a little sample of each taste. Now, when you're pressed for time, at least try, you know, if you don't have mango chutney at hand, if you're pressed for time, at least try to include a little sample of a sweet taste. So this is my secret weapon. I include a little sweet taste within the meal. And, you know, I want you to think of adding some sweet potatoes on top of your veggie bowls or a little mango or peach in your salsa or in your salads. Now, to read lots more about this Ayurvedic principle, go on over to that episode called All About Cravings or to the post at bramble.com, and you have a ton of ideas there. All right, next on the list is Japan. Now, Japan is not only famous for its sushi, and remember, of course you can have plant-based sushi. It's absolutely fantastic, but we're not talking about sushi today. In Japan, there are so many different traditions that have to do with the act of cooking and eating, presentation. It's really remarkable. So I'm going to give you all the kind of ins and outs today. So presentation in Japan and small portions of different and very colorful components with a huge emphasis on vegetables is such a large part of Japanese eating habits. We tend to think that Japanese food is just, you know, raw fish everywhere and the typical sushi, but Japanese cuisine is much more than just fish. In fact, it's one of those cultures that really emphasizes the vegetables, especially the green leafy vegetables. And presentation and having those little small portions of lots of different things, I want you to think of the typical bento box, right? We've all seen these cute bento boxes with the different sections and different components. Well, this is true in Japan, even if it's not served in the actual little box. So plates have small portions of different and colorful components. So you sit down in front of this beautiful, incredible plate, and lots of those components are entirely made out of vegetables. So this means that the visual aspect of food is just as important for them, and it's a very sensory and pleasurable experience. So you're not just putting something on a plate, gobbling it up at your desk, trying to finish it off quickly before your next meeting. No, forget about it. It's about really kind of sinking into that moment of eating. I think that's so beautiful. It's one of the things I also love in France. We're going to talk about France. It's the last one on our list, but let's stick to Japan for now. So beautiful presentation is key in their culture. You know this if you've ever been to a Japanese restaurant. Everything is just so beautiful. It's simple, but it's beautiful. And I have to tell you, this is something that really surprised me. Almost every single snack and meal in traditional Japanese cooking includes a steamed and a pickled vegetable. Now, mostly for the health benefits of both. So for example, a lightly steamed veggie retains all of its natural flavors and nutrients. It's one of the healthiest cooking methods. And a pickle is a source of probiotics. So in Japan, these two forms of a vegetable are included in almost every snack and meal. Now, of course, all countries, even if they had the most beautiful, perfect, balanced way of eating traditionally, have now become a little more westernized. I don't even know if that's a word. Did I just make up that word? I don't know, but I love it. So they have just gone the Western route. They have McDonald's everywhere. Now globalization has made it so that these cultures are losing their little healthy edge. But I'm talking about traditional Japanese cooking in this little example. So I love that idea. I love that idea of having a little rule like this, in which no matter what you're eating, even if it's something slightly naughty, you have to include some foods that provide at least some health-giving components or some benefits. This is so simple, right? If we make this little rule for ourselves that we're going to add something really, really healthy at every meal and every snack, this is kind of the base of that concept of crowding out. So I've heard a lot of people use this same kind of method in saying that they have this rule of having a very big salad every single day. When you have a very big salad every single day, that's crowding out some of the more unhealthier stuff, right? Now, this can be a salad, it can be your favorite roasted vegetable, it can be your favorite steamed vegetable, a little stir fry, it can be anything that you love. And if you're a member of our online program, I want you to check out I think the video is called Find Your Magic Ingredient, and that is a video that explains a little bit of, I don't know, one of my philosophies on how to include something healthy but delicious at every meal. And this is partly where this idea comes from. In Japan, this is kind of a given. You include healthy components, you have this rule, and you stick to it. Even if you're having something that is decadent and wonderful and delicious and is making you happy, you include something that is healthy and that is helping crowd out and is helping you with that portion control of the unhealthier foods. Pretty cool, right? Okay, so bright colors, also very important, especially in the form of vegetables. So having very, very bright, bold vegetables on the plate, there's a huge importance placed on the brightness and color and the general appearance of the plate, like I said before, and small portions throughout. So lots of different components, but small portions of each, and their meals are much lower in refined sugars and processed foods. I remember very clearly a friend went to the Coca-Cola factory in Atlanta. So she went to the Coca-Cola factory where they have samples of Coca-Cola from each country. Now we all think that the recipe for Coca-Cola is something that is universal. Well, as my friend told me, they have little variations, different variations for different places in the world. So if you are traveling somewhere and you feel your Coca-Cola tastes different, well, it might be. So many have the exact same formula, but some have it a little differently. And in Japan, I can clearly remember her telling me that the Coca-Cola was much less sweeter because it's a culture that is naturally kind of, it's just not predisposed to this very strong sweet taste. They have been used to having a lot less sweets and a lot less refined sugars in their diet. So the sweet taste is very overpowering and people don't like it as much. So that's a lesson right there on how our own habits influence our cravings and what we want to eat and what we like to eat, right? If it just doesn't pass our lips, we're just not going to have that inclination, right? Now, I'm not saying that sugar is something you have to stay away from by any means. I'm just saying that it's lower. Traditional Japanese food is lower in refined sugars and processed foods. It's more natural. And, you know, they have a huge focus on vegetables. I'll say it again, especially green leafy vegetables, root vegetables like sweet potatoes, lots of rice. And yes, this even includes white rice. So, we're going to talk about that at the end of the episode. And many other very natural foods. All right, now here's where things get, I love this. Here's where the cook in me just goes wild. And you've heard me mention this before again in that post all about cravings. They follow the principle, two principles. First one I'm going to talk about is washoku. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So the principle of washoku is the principle of the five colors, five flavors, and five cooking methods in a meal to help kind of infuse flavor and texture variations, to help you reduce cravings, and to use the most out of the vegetables that they grow. So in a meal, they include five colors, five flavors, and five cooking methods so that you have different textures and different, I don't know, just a different sensation with everything you're eating, and the meal is balanced. So this is kind of similar to that Ayurvedic principle, only they take it up a notch. They include cooking methods and the color of foods. So I love this. And if you want to learn more about this with specifics and kind of examples of those five colors or five cooking methods and how this is traditionally done in Japan, go to that episode all about cravings. So the other little principle is the principle of kansha. Now the principle of kansha goes hand in hand with washoku. The principle of kansha is one in which there is a focus on feeling gratitude for what nature provides, which is always lovely to feel grateful. And it also has a focus on how we can really take advantage of ingredients. So reducing waste, for example, using the leaves, the root, the peel, using the food fully and preventing lots of waste that is so typical in the Western world, right? We just see our greens, we take little part of it, we throw everything else out. This is not something that is done in Japan. They use up the vegetables fully. And I'm talking about vegetables not because this is a vegan podcast. No, this is a principle that is associated with vegetables. It began because people had vegetables growing in their gardens. They had a limited number of vegetables, so they didn't have a huge variety, and they had to try to use up what they had. They had to use it up in different ways, and they had to take advantage of the entire vegetable. So both of these principles, washoku and kansha, are mainly focused on vegetables in Japan. So how sweet is that? I think there are plenty of things that we can steal from the Japanese, don't you think? Okay, let's talk about China. So what is there in China that is so cool we just have to start using it and stealing it now? Well, for the first thing I'm going to mention, the first thing is chopsticks. Chopsticks. Yeah, chopsticks. Now, granted, chopsticks are a standard in most Asian cuisines, not only in China. And, you know, the thing that I love about chopsticks is that not only do they make eating much more fun, in my opinion, I don't remember in what... There was a TV series, I don't remember which one it was, in which somebody said that eating Chinese takeout in those little containers, those little kind of little typical boxes, cardboard boxes, and eating the noodles out of those made them even more delicious, and it was like feng shui for noodles. Well, I think chopsticks are the feng shui of Chinese or Asian dishes, Asian food. I think it makes everything more fun. I think it makes it more enjoyable and more delicious. I don't know why, but I am a fan of the chopstick. So not only that, but they help you slow down while eating. They help you eat smaller bites and they make the meal last longer. And as you know, I'm a big fan of mindful eating. We're gonna talk about that in a second. And this is gonna help you slow down, which in my opinion is the main tool related to mindful eating. Now in China, foods are normally eaten at regular times. So important and so healthy for you. If you are a member of our online program, My Bramble, you know that this is one of our 8 Bramble principles to live by, to eat regular meals at regular times. So in China, they also focus on eating a good breakfast, a full lunch, and a light dinner. This is something I strive to do. It's also one of our principles at Bramble, and you'll see it kind of as a very recurring pattern as we move down our list of countries. People have a full lunch and a lighter dinner. This is very hard for me. I have to tell you, I have to admit, because I grew up on the American way of eating in which dinner was that big meal you sat down to share a moment together at the end of the day, and in which you had, you know, the beautiful pastas and the lasagnas and the just the, you know, well, of course, the meat and potatoes when I was a meat eater. So this is so hard for me to do because everything inside of me goes towards that those rich foods at night. But I have to tell you, it's something that has really helped me. I have to kind of push myself to do it a little bit. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes I just go for the rich meals at dinner time, but it really does help. And you're going to see it as a recurring theme, even in my native country of Venezuela, which is why I was kind of like that little ugly duckling in my country, because I ate in such a different way from everybody else. I was used to having this very, very full dinner. But in China, they do it like they do it in many other places that have great, I don't know, great relationship with food and low obesity, and it's that the fuller meal is at lunchtime. Okay, another thing that the Chinese do that I absolutely love has to do with soup, especially broth-style soups with lots of green leafy vegetables. So these soups are served either with the meal or after the meal, not before the meal. They're served with the meal or after. So in the first case of having it with the meal, the idea is that it is reducing the need to have any kind of sugary drink with your food, any kind of very concentrated fruit juices or, I don't know, unhealthier drinks with your food. Because if you've ever had soup as your main meal, you know that you don't reach for the liquids as much, right? Because it's liquid, it's going down easily. So this is part of the reason why this is kind of, I don't know, positive in the way the Chinese do it. And in the case of having it after the meal, it's just as a way of ensuring your feeling of fullness, as a way to round out the meal and close the meal. I always love this idea. You've heard about this in our video in the online program called The French Ender, in which the French also have a little tradition to mark the end of the meal. And this is the way many Chinese families do it. Many people in China also take a slow, kind of leisurely walk after a meal to facilitate digestion. So all of these little things mark the end of the meal, and I think they're great. I think they're great little habits to start putting into place. All right, now we move on over to a different part of the world. I'm gonna be talking about Mexico, about my native country of Venezuela, and other Latin cultures. Why am I packing these in together? You know, there are no two Latin American cuisines that are alike. There is so much variety. People think it's all the same thing. It is not. It is completely different from one place to the next. But I've put them in one category because many share some of the same principles when it comes to the experience of eating. So that's why I've kind of put these together in one category. Now, of course, I'm including my country of Venezuela, which has very specific culinary traditions. Now, in these countries, as I mentioned before, lunch is normally the largest meal of the day. And dinner has, it's a much lighter fare, serving smaller meals and simpler meals. So the meals you have at night are the smallest of the day. Breakfast is a normal sized, you know, full, something that will fill you up. Lunch is a big meal and dinner is lighter. So this was something that I didn't experience personally living in Venezuela, because I have to tell you that the reason I didn't is because I'm actually the only Venezuelan in my entire family. Nobody else was born in Venezuela. Several of my family members, including my mom, lived there for many years. So a lot of Venezuelan cuisine was infused in our meals, but we still had that tradition of having a big dinner. So this is something that I have always struggled with, and I know it's so positive. It is much healthier for you. It's better for your sleep patterns to have a lighter meal at night. But, you know, I'm just putting it out there. I'm just being real with you. It's hard for me. So lots of legumes are also part of these cuisines. And as you know, legumes like beans and lentils, they improve your feelings of fullness. They are so satisfying, not to mention nutritious. And there is also, when it comes to the tastes and the textures and the foods, there is a focus on combining both sweet and savory tastes in dishes. And this is consistent throughout many Latin American food traditions. Especially in Venezuela, we love combining a little sweet taste with savory, with spicy. So it's not as spicy as the one in Mexico, but it has these kind of different levels in your palate when you have a bite of traditional Venezuelan dishes. So again, like I mentioned before, these help with cravings, having different tastes. The meal is more balanced, it fills you up, it makes you feel more satisfied. Now, someone once asked me how I would describe Venezuelan food to someone who had never had it before. And the first thing that came to mind was that it's the perfect balance of savory and sweet in every bite. So it's very hard cuisine to explain to people. It also has the presence of the most beautiful and delicious chili that I have ever tasted, and I have been unable to find it anywhere else. This is typical in Venezuela. They sell it, like, it costs pennies, and it's called the ají dulce. So it's kind of a sweet chili, but it's both sweet and very aromatic, and it's a little pungent. It's the little ingredient, the magic ingredient that gives Venezuelan cuisine its magic, quite frankly. This little chili, it's what gives it its amazing, amazing taste and flavor. Now, as I mentioned before, including that little sweet note helps prevent those cravings. It helps make you feel fuller. And together with that heat and spice typically found in Mexican dishes, these two things are kind of a straight path to feeling full and satisfied. So really good to include a little sweet, a little savory, a little spice. Yeah, sounds good, right? Now, very important in Latin American cultures is the focus on meals shared with family. People sit down to eat. They share a good meal together. Families eat together. And food is always synonymous with a sense of community. And even in traditions involving the actual cooking and the preparing of the food, so many traditions in Venezuela, especially one we have at Christmas time, preparing a very typical dish called the hallaca, which is kind of, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of something wrapped in a plantain leaf, kind of like a tamale, but absolutely nothing like it at the same time. So this is something that is prepared throughout many days with all of the family helping and working together. So there's this big sense of community. Families are big. They just join in together with the preparing of the food and the eating of the food. So there's a big sense of community and family that is synonymous with eating. And when you sit down to eat with friends, with family, it's just a special moment, and you savor it and you enjoy it, and there's pleasure associated with food. All right, so that's all I'm going to say for now. I could do 500 episodes on Venezuelan food because it is fantastic, and yes, you can have delicious Venezuelan food in its plant-based version, even though Venezuelan food is very meat-centric, but you can absolutely I make Venezuelan food all the time, and I transform it. All right, so let's leave that aside for now, and we're going over to Italy and Greece, and yes, I'm talking about the Mediterranean diet at its finest. So I think that few cultures, other than the French, which we'll get to soon, they have such a huge love of food and the act of eating as much as these places, especially Italy. This is so important when it comes to your relationship with food and with finding balance with your meals. They have a love of food and the act of eating. It's not something that people fear. It's not something that is associated with dieting. Food is all about pleasure, and there is little to no concern over calories or grams of fat or carbs. I mean, hello, Italians and pasta, right? So, you know, there is just a focus on really fresh, locally grown products and products that are at their peak in flavor. So the focus on having the best possible kind of ingredients for preparing your dishes is very important in Italy. People eat, and in Greece as well. So people eat and cook at home, and they also get together for meals, and their eating habits kind of go hand in hand with a very stress-free lifestyle. This is also a component that is essential to healthy eating. When you are relaxed, when you aren't stressed about food, when you have a stress-free lifestyle in general, not only related to eating, the act of eating is not emotional. It's not cravings all the time. It's just that, you know, you have to fuel your body and you have to enjoy yourself while you're doing it. There's pleasure associated with food, and that's fine. That's healthy. So people enjoy food, they enjoy life, they only work to live. This is so different from what we see in other cultures, right? Especially in the US. Here people just work so they can live the life they want. They take long holidays, they travel everywhere, they indulge in downtime, and they have a healthy dose of good food with lots of vegetables, lots of nuts, lots of legumes, and yes, pasta. Pasta. That's such good news, right? Who doesn't love it? All right, now I'm gonna move on over to Spain, which is close by, and it's also part and has all of the benefits of the Mediterranean diet, and it's my home base. And, you know, Spain is just also a place in which enjoyment and relaxation and taking plenty of time to rest and to eat, they're a constant here. You know, there's the magical siesta or nap, the afternoon nap. It's a must. Most people do it if their schedules allow, but many, many people do it. It's such a big part of the culture that many traditional shops are closed at this hour. You cannot find, some of the more traditional shops open at this hour because it's just such a sacred part of the culture here. Now, although Spain is very meat-centric, yes, Spain is also extremely proud of its agricultural production. So it's one of its biggest exports. And this includes, of course, wine and olive oil and many other vegetables and fruits. And, you know, this means that when you're in Spain, a simple salad of tomatoes and olives and onions, it can seem like a religious experience, because I have to tell you that there's nothing like the flavors of the vegetables and the fruits in Spain. It's wild. It's wild. And remember, I come from a tropical country where, tropical fruits have it's just this powerhouse of flavor. Same thing happens in Spain. The products that are kind of grown here, it's just incredible. If you've never had a Spanish tomato, oh my God, you're missing out. There's this restaurant in the city center that just serves this very simple salad. It's the easiest salad. It's just kind of romaine hearts and tomatoes, onions, olives, and just a simple dressing of a little vinegar and olive oil and some salt. I go nuts about the salad, and it's just so delicious. There are restaurants that are famous for their tomato salad, which I have to tell you, it just includes tomatoes and some crushed garlic and some olive oil, and that's it. And people go crazy over it because the flavor is just awesome. So what else can I tell you about Spain? People in Spain, they're active, they walk, they run, they ride their bikes. You know, sometimes, especially I live in the outskirts of Madrid, I live in the outskirts of the city. So there's a lot of, wooded areas, there's a lot of woods, forests, parks, and things where I live. So if you are feeling lazy on a Saturday morning, all you have to do is look out the window, because you're gonna see so many people exercising and just enjoying themselves outside that you just wanna head out and do it. It's really an active lifestyle, what people have here. There's just a big focus on enjoying life, on traveling. It isn't a work-centered society at all. And in all of these activities, people just indulge in and enjoy food without feeling guilty. Now, I would love for it to be a little less centered on the meat, because in some places it can be meat-centered, but it's so easy being vegan in Spain. we're in fact creating a series of videos for you that you're going to love. It's like a little vegan tour of Madrid. You're going to see all the amazing options that are out there. It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, Spanish culture, just like in Italy and in Greece, it has to do with relaxation, enjoying life, enjoying food, and focusing on really good ingredients. That's kind of the key here. Okay, so we've reached our last one, which is going to be France. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that any country I didn't mention doesn't have things that we should steal from them. There are so many traditions in Middle Eastern cuisine, in, I don't know, the African cuisine that are so healthy and wonderful, but I just wanted to keep it to my top favorites today. So let's talk about France. You've heard me, I'm France obsessed, French obsessed, I don't know, both. So finally we get to France, and if you've read our blog before, if you've listened to our episodes before, you know that I have studied and admire the French tremendously. Now, their very high use of animal products aside, that's the only part I don't like. It's just very, very centered on cheese and meat and butter. But aside from that, they have what in my opinion is a perfect relationship with food, other than the fact that I wish everybody was vegan, but that's not gonna happen right now, at least right now. So let's focus on their relationship with food. I really feel it's, I don't know, it's the best of all of the cultures that I've studied and that I've been to, and it's just fantastic. So as you know, mindful eating is one of the core concepts that I teach you here at Brownbowl, and especially in our online program. If you want to learn, I've been mentioning our online program. If you're new to the podcast, you can check that out at mybrownbowl.com. And so mindful eating, it's where it's at. It's where it's at when you want to find freedom from dieting and you just don't want to over-obsess about food. So the French have mastered it without it necessarily, you know, without giving it the same name. So they might not call it mindful eating, but it's what they're doing. So food is such an important part of the culture, and the focused place on it is just solely enjoyment and pleasure. It's not an obsession with health or with dieting. And from very early on, kids learn how to eat a wide range of foods. They're just used to eating different kinds of foods, including vegetables, including green vegetables. They're used to sitting at the table without distractions, with real forks, real knives, real plates, even at school, as Michael Moore showed us in that wonderful movie. You have to go watch it. So another wonderful thing about the French is that portions are small. You've heard this before, right? Hence the term French portions. Now, I often ask myself, is it really that the portions are small, or is it that our portions in the West have gotten so big that it feels like we're being cheated when we go to a French restaurant, right? So yeah, of course there are extremes. I've been to restaurants where you were literally served a little spoon of something. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just smaller portions than what we have in the US or what we have in the West. So they have smaller portions and they eat very slowly. And as I told you before, that's the basis of mindful eating, right? So meals can last hours in France over several courses. And this helps them practice mindful eating like total pros. And it just boosts that sense of being present with your meal and enjoying it. Okay, now in France also, again, once again, lunch is the largest meal of the day. And they do little to no snacking. Now, you know, my opinion with snacking is that it varies from person to person. So I want you to take this one with a grain of salt. I think snacking is good for some people. And as long as you're not, you know, kind of grazing the entire day and you have those starts and ends to those meals. But they do little to no snacking, especially when it comes to processed foods or junk food. This is good. So snacks, if they do them, they're not focused on processed foods or junk food. Now, what else? The French walk everywhere. They walk everywhere. And this part I love, the traditional gym and kind of hardcore workouts are kind of absent from most people's lives. So boot camp and all those things we do over here, they're just not as present. People just walk and they just, you know, they just enjoy their city. They walk everywhere, or they ride their bikes, or things that are done you know, outside as part of the day to day. They walk upstairs. So that type of stuff, right? So in spite of the fact that their food is very rich and heavy in calories with all that cream and butter and, you know, the chocolate croissants and all of that, they're smaller portions and they're very kind of healthy focus on how to eat, not so much what to eat. It has led them to have one of the lowest obesity rates in the developed world. Can you believe that? Well, I can believe that because every time I go to France, we're just kind of mind blown because everybody looks slim and fit and healthy. So it's wild, right? It's just wild. All right, so that was our little tour through all my kind of favorite food traditions and eating traditions from around the globe. Now, we might do a second version of this episode soon with others, but I didn't want you to sit here for 3 hours. So through all of these places and all of the ones that I'm leaving for that next time, you can see kind of that a few things are kind of a common thread, right? There is a marked decrease in the obsession over food, obsession over the body, obsession over restriction, dieting, and control. There are no 24-hour gyms in these places, and your current kind of workout or meal plan is just not part of your conversations or social interactions. So you're not going to find three women discussing what diet they're on, or, you know, of course, with exceptions. Everybody talks about these things in all countries, I'm sure, but it's just not as big as, it's not as important as we have it in other places, partly because there is just not a focus on restriction. When restriction isn't a part of the game, you relax and you just focus on food as fuel and enjoyment. So people eat when they're hungry. This is another thing that is a constant. They eat real food, so real food coming from nature, not processed food. So foods, ingredients that are just beautiful and very flavorful, and they stop when they're full. You know, they enjoy food as one of life's greatest pleasures. It's just a much healthier way to look at the moment of eating. Now, many of these diets, and this is something that I want to kind of show you, many of these diets include olive oil, pasta, rice, sweet potatoes, and other starchy carbs regularly. And this to me is a sign of how none of these foods are the devil, nor should we idolize them and eat nothing but, right? So this focus we have in the West of some ingredients being bad, some ingredients being good, the good ones being the only thing we're going to eat for 3 weeks or 3 years, this is not a part of their life. They eat a varied diet and include lots of vegetables, lots of healthy fats, and they don't over-obsess. Now, these healthy habits that are so ingrained in other cultures, they all play a part in people's eating choices. So all of those healthy habits, not being so busy and stressed all the time, enjoying relaxation, traveling, just, I don't know, having downtime. They're all kind of important little pieces of their eating jigsaw puzzle, if you may. And the good news is that you can steal these habits and traditions and make them fit your life. We can steal these. We can start putting these into practice. I can tell you that this is something that I've gained a little practice with because I've had these three cultures that have influenced my life so much. You know, this American way of eating, Venezuelan and Spanish. And I've kind of taken what fits, what works for me from each one. Everybody can do this. It's really, really simple. You just choose what works for you. You try some things out. There is no magic pill, you guys. There is no magic pill. There's no perfect or magical way of eating. All of our bodies are different, you know, but we can improve our habits. We can improve our habits little by little, and we can definitely learn from cultures out there who have kind of stayed true to their roots, and they see health as an all-encompassing thing. It's so important. Now, it's not just about food in these places. It also includes relaxation and sleep and social connections, being able to live your life without obsessing over food or dieting, and, you know, being naturally active. And yes, of course, there's one thing that is at the base of all of these cultures. They enjoy food to the fullest without feeling guilty. So yeah, beautiful, right? Isn't it beautiful? Now, I want you to tell me, I want you to go to the blog post that corresponds to this episode, or on social media, wherever you want, or send us an email. Is there a food tradition in your culture or in your family's culture that you would like to share with us. So don't forget to leave that in the comments. Don't forget to share this podcast episode with someone who you love, who is a food lover, who wants to incorporate saner eating habits into their lives. So don't forget to share the episode, share the post. And of course, remember to leave us a little glowing review on iTunes or Stitcher. It really helps other people find us. And I will see you again next week and on our date, which is on Thursdays. And of course, what I want you to do now is I want you to think like an Italian, like a Greek, like a French. Go and eat something delicious. Enjoy it. Don't feel guilty. And I'll see you next time.